Husker Doc Talk Podcast 2018 Special Edition Spring Game. Greetings and welcome to another edition of the Husker Doc Talk Podcast. Yes, yes, yes. Many of you have been waiting for it. Rob and I have just been sitting back waiting for the right time, and I guess you could say now the frost has thawed a little bit.
That is so bad.
That is a bad cliche, isn't
that
it?
That is so bad, dude.
It's been a while. Let me have a bad cliche.
Okay, we got to kind of work into these things.
Yeah,
I guess.
That's right. I do need to say I got confirmation from the one and only Dave Remington that the Boomer Esiason Foundation and the Remington Trophy will be back for another year of the Husker Doc Talk Podcast. So in the fall, you can count on each and every week Dr. Rob and I sitting down here drinking beer and talking Nebraska football.
Are we going to get a beer sponsor again?
Well, no, I believe so. Now, I can tell you that Scotty from Husker Hounds is back on board.
Nice.
I can tell you that Ticket Express is back on board.
Excellent. Those guys have passion. Love Chad. Love Scott.
I had another meeting with Infusion Brewing earlier in the week, and I think we should know by the middle of May or the end of May. Now, I will say this before we dive into the Husker Doc Talk
podcast.
I had
a lot of people tweeting telling me they went up to Infusion to try what we try, because we tried a lot of different stuff.
We have, and that's why I want to tell you about what's coming up on May 17th. It's the Scareway Cancer Boo Brew. You know that I'm involved with Scareway Cancer, and this is Boo Brew 5. And what we do is we take an afternoon during the summer, and we go from 4 o'clock to 7 o'clock, and we just have basically a bunch of picnic tables and drink beer. Last year, we had 200-300 people there. This year, it is from 4 o'clock to 7 o'clock at the Infusion Brewing Company Southwest location. It's the tap room. Room and
that
brewery
sounds
operation.
Delicious.
So we're gonna have four, and to keep
now,
it
what's
simple,
the address of that?
I tell you,
approximate.
It goes,
you got an approximate?
You know where Oak Hills Country Club is in Omaha? Here's the best way. The address is at scarewaycancer.org. But we're gonna have four beers on tap. We're gonna have the Vanilla Bean Blonde.
That's kind of their standby.
We're gonna have the South Pacific Pineapple IPA.
Not as pineapple-y as you'd think. We tried that one.
We're going to have the Wilder Dunkel, which is a darker...
So it's a brown ale.
Yeah,
Dunkels are a brown ale.
And then we're going to have the Mets Lager, the new Mets release.
I saw you tweeted about that.
Yeah, I tell you what, Rob, it's actually really good.
I bet it's good.
It's just one of those everyday 5.2% alcohol, everyday drinking beers. It's what...
Weak.
Yeah, well, but it tastes like... But it's good for a summer beer, you know what I mean?
You're going to feel good. It's kind of scary when we're talking about a non-light beer for a good summer beer.
May 17th is a Thursday. Do you think you can make it out? If we can say that Rob Zadiska is going to be at Boo Brew 5, that would help me get some people there. It'd be nice.
Yeah, because people really want to hang out with the old Husker.
They do.
I've got rings.
There are a lot of jock sniffers out there, all right?
Okay,
let's
not bag on the potential customers here. I'm like literally scrolling through phone to see where I'm going to be at here on May 17th. That is a Thursday night.
That is a Thursday night, 4 to 7. I know you've been in surgery a lot lately, but you get 14 weeks vacation during the year.
I like to – it's only like 13, dude, but I like to stick needles in people and give them drugs, legally, of course.
Yes, of course, only legally.
No, hold on.
I know, you're just killing time.
It's like I got to, like, drag through my phone here. So Thursday the 17th.
4 o'clock to 7 o'clock.
I'm going to say at the worst, I'm making an appearance.
Okay.
Like for an hour or so.
Okay, that's all I ask. That's all I ask.
I'm going to need somebody to drive my drunk ass home, because we've seen what can happen in an hour here on the podcast.
That's exactly
me
right.
Drinking.
You know, before we dive into the Scott Frost era, what has happened really since December all the way through spring practice, I do have to say thank you to everybody on Twitter who follows Dr. Rob at Doc Talk Sports, because they've been begging for us to do a podcast.
Okay, I got my cousin Matt in Ohio texting me literally once a week for the last, no joke, probably 8 or 9 weeks. You said you're doing one. You said where is it? Where is it? Like he actually went to the, I think it was on Podbean, and he went to our page on Podbean to pull up the what available podcasts have you not listened to? And there's like this big, you have no available podcast.
That's a lot of podcasts. He's like every season's on there.
Yeah, he screenshotted it and sent it to me. Matt's got kind of this core group of guys, and there's a couple of them who actually now tweet at me, and it's a group of guys out of Columbus, Ohio, who actually half of them are Ohio State grads who are just thankful for something to listen to other than Buckeye shit.
That, and we do a non-traditional podcast, and the fact that we drink beer and we swear like sailors, and we're pretty open and honest.
It's a pretty good podcast.
Yeah, I mean, we like to have fun. So we want to thank everybody who's been waiting patiently, because the truth is, there's been a lot of noise out there. Rob and I don't claim to try to keep up with, you know, Husker Illustrated or Hail Varsity or the Omaha World Herald or the Lincoln Journal Star, because there's a lot of noise that people are throwing out content each and every day. So we kind of laid back and said, all right, we'll just pay attention. We'll do our thing, and then when the time's right, we'll come in and give our thoughts.
We throw some relevance into the mix.
Obviously, we got a lot of ground to cover. There's really no set agenda to this podcast. I want everybody to know we didn't come in with an outline. This is the first one of the year, and really, it's just kind of that special edition. The podcast actually will kick into gear around August 1st. We might do one or two during the summer, but we do want to thank Dave Remington, who was one of the guys who wrote me on Facebook last night. He's like, hey, are you guys going to do a podcast? And I'm like, Dave, is the Remington Trophy going to sponsor it? Yep. I go, well, then we're doing a podcast. So if Dave says yes, then we say yes.
Which, you know, I always say, if you get a chance to go to the Remington Trophy event in Lincoln every January, it is just an absolute who's who of NFL and college players. It's, if you are a sports fan, it is one of the best events that you can attend. And I say that on a national level. There's a lot of events that are open to the public where the public can buy tickets to. This is one of the good ones. And it's smaller town. I mean, this isn't New York. This isn't L.A. This is not Dallas. It's not Orlando. But if you got a chance to attend it, it's a great event. It's a good time. And if you love college football, Dave always gets some big names.
And I think you need to, if you have a son who is playing football, be aware that Dave's going to bring his football camp back again this summer. So Dave's going to be in Omaha this summer.
He does a camp. It does tend to be a little lineman focused.
Well, understandably, he's the greatest offensive lineman in Nebraska history.
He only won two outs. Come on. And a Lombardi in there. And was an academic All-American. Anyway, he always gets it. It's always a whole slew of NFL guys who come back, former Huskers and former NFL guys who coach the camp. You literally get your kids coached by a bunch of NFL guys.
So look for the Remington Trophy or the Remington Football Camp coming up in the summer. And then, of course, when the fall rolls around, we'll be talking a lot about the Remington Trophy. And again, if you need tickets anywhere, go to Ticket Express. If you need Husker gear, you go to Husker Hounds. And, yeah, I'm going to give a shout-out to Infusion Brewing because we love Infusion Brewing, and that's where Scareway Cancer's Brew Brew 5 is. Go to scarewaycancer.org. But Infusion Brewing Company for your Nebraska craft beer.
They make delicious
beer.
So
let's start with the most recent and maybe work backwards. Let's start with the spring game.
And the last practice of spring football, you mean?
Actually, let's start with what everybody's talking about.
Okay.
The damn Alan Parsons Project Sirius song.
You know, there was a time where I probably might have been a little upset about, okay, are they actually going to get rid of this? I don't know. Maybe they are. This would be horrible. Okay, this didn't even start until I was a senior in college.
Well, that's when the Husker Vision screens came on board.
It was. So they came out, would have been fall of 94, first time ever.
And they stole it from the Bulls.
UCLA, yeah, UCLA game in Lincoln. Yeah, I might be wrong in the day. It would have been probably mid-late September 1994. Yeah. And that's when they did it. And I remember they brought all of us out the Friday night before.
To show you?
Yeah, they brought it was the team and it was the team, coaches, trainers, et cetera. They brought us all out and they did the whole tunnel walk, essentially. They did the video version of the tunnel walk, what we were going to walk out to the next day. And I remember going and buying, like,
You went and bought an Alan Parsons Project cassette.
I did.
Tape, didn't you?
No, it was a CD. We were that far. They had CDs then. But I went and bought the CD. I probably got it in the basement somewhere still. It's, you know, I...
Does it matter?
No.
Oh, thank you.
God, I don't think it does. I'm one of those guys where, you know, there was a time when it would have mattered because it started when I was there, and it started that senior year. As time has gone by, when I think about, like, what matters in terms of, okay, what's Nebraska football? There's things that matter and there's things that don't. This doesn't matter.
Thank you. And thank you so much. Because, A, they stole it from the Chicago Bulls, which it's fine to mimic because at that time the Bulls were on top of the world. They were the world champions. It was Michael Jordan. You heard that song, you're like, that speaks of excellence. That speaks of championships. Well, now here we are in 2017. There's got to be a better...
Bulls suck.
The Bulls suck and the Huskers suck right now. So... Now, yeah. I heard somebody, and I haven't listened to the song yet, but if somebody put it out there, there's a Trans-Siberian Orchestra one that they said would be really cool. I mean, it's got to be instrumental. I don't like words. I like just instrumental, heart-pumping stuff.
Yeah,
they did,
what was it, Beatles Come Together. For the spring game, which, yeah. You know, was a good one.
I'm not sure, excuse me, while I clear my throat
would work for the pregame, although it's kind of fun for like a mid-game celebration.
But if you're really worried about what the Tunnel Walk song is, your fucking priorities are messed up. Don't you think?
I probably could not have put it better myself, including the F-bomb in there. But it's true. That's the thing. When I just said 4 minutes ago, There's things that define Nebraska football, and I think there's things that are important. And after going through four different coaches since Tom Osborne, there's things now that you come back to with Scott that he's talking the talk, and it's stuff that I think from a former player standpoint is important. And it's you don't need to come in and do this hardcore run-based, ground-based, grind it out, Woody Hayes, 3 yards in a cloud of dust offense. Because I'll tell you what, if that's what you're looking for with Scott Frost, you're not getting it. You're just not. Change is okay sometimes if that change works. And I think there's kind of some core principles that Scott's really, really focusing on. And one is conditioning and strength training. One is hard work in general. One is there is a handful of principles that Osborne just really bought into. And I mean, obviously high character, hard work, that figured into it, obviously. But Osborne had a number of these principles where he wanted the ball snapped. I can't give you the number. It was something like 22 seconds left on the play clock or 17 seconds left.
He wanted to go fast.
He did. He wanted the defense to have no rest. We still huddled, but it was quick. And I remember Osborne even, we did this thing where the offensive line would line up facing the defense literally, I think it was only like a yard and a half or 2 yards off the ball. So literally when you broke huddle, you would basically take two, like a step and a half forward and one step to the side, and you were in position. And Osborne literally timed it out. Okay, this is going to save 3.7 seconds huddling this way.
So he was doing saver metrics back then.
Oh God, yeah. I mean, Osborne had...
Just think if he would have had the Google Cloud to work with.
Oh, my God. The guy had a PhD in ed psych. What do you expect? That's the kind of stuff he thought about, and he figured out, okay, if you run a play and you snap the ball with an average of 17.2 to 22.1 seconds left on the play clock, your odds of winning are 94.3%. He would figure all of that out. If you have 1.6 turnovers or less per game, your odds of winning were 93.7%. Osborne would figure all of that stuff out. Those were our goals. You didn't go into a team meeting with, okay, our goal this week is to beat Colorado. I got to be honest with you. When we lined up, we didn't give a rat's ass if we beat Colorado. We were worried about, okay, Are there 22 seconds left on the play clock? Are we turning the ball over? Are we getting 4.7 yards per carry rushing? Are we getting 7.8 yards per pass? That was the kind of stuff you were worried about going into a football game, and by the time the game ended, you usually had a 2.5 touchdown lead, and winning became secondary. But Frost thinks that way as well, too. And so you saw a huge impetus about that in the spring game. You saw about that during the spring practices. It was funny because I remember I talked to Tom Osborne at a teammates event. I can't tell you what year it was. It was when Bo Pelini was the coach. So Bo Pelini's first season would have been 2008. This would have been fall of 08, sometime between fall of 08 and fall of 09. Okay. And I had a chance to talk to Osborne. And one of the things he said that was kind of – Osborne actually very much liked Bo. I think people have a hard time maybe wrapping their head around that because personality-wise they're completely opposite. Osborne really liked Bo Pelini. There was something that they liked. And I think Osborne maybe viewed him as sort of like a young Charlie McBride or a young Monty Kiffin or a young Bob Devaney. I don't know. But personality, and I say that personality-wise. But those two guys clicked and very much liked each other as people. And one of the things that Osborne expressed from a mild frustration standpoint is that Pelini ran his practices much like an NFL coach. And what I mean by that is, and we've talked about this on the show before, he ran his practices like starters get most all the reps, second stringers get maybe like 0.6% of the repetitions, and that's about it. You're supposed to be doing mental reps the whole time. Wasn't that Bill Callahan's term maybe? But That was Osborne. But Osborne's logic was everybody gets repetitions and everybody gets endless repetitions. And therein was the strength of the walk-on program because you could field two offensive scout teams for the defense to practice against. And you could field two defensive scout teams for the offense to practice against. And so both first and second string offense, which honestly first string offense was basically a two deep and second string offense was basically a two deep. So you went four or five deep on the offensive side of the ball with guys getting an absolute endless number of repetitions during practice. And that was one of Osborne's tenets of success was the fact that he could throw a redshirt freshman or a redshirt sophomore into the mix in a second quarter of a game against Arizona State and know the kid's going to do perfectly fine because he's had the exact same number of repetitions that the starters have had against the exact same looks in practice. And that was a very strong part of Osborne's his overall philosophy to success. Scott Frost thinks the same way. Frost wants the walk-on program. Frost wants these endless runs of scout teams for guys to practice against.
He wants depth. You can't win without depth.
He wants depth. And you can sit there and go, well, that's basically the athletic form of slave labor. And I would say, no, it's not, because I spent a year on scout team practicing against Kenny Walker and Joe Sims, who is such a good athlete that he went from a three-year starter at D-tackle into college to a starter at offensive tackle with the Packers and the Falcons in the NFL. And Mike Kroll and Mike Petco and Mike Anderson and all these other guys, Travis Hill. I spent a year on scout team practicing against a slew of All-Americans, getting some of the most quality repetitions you can imagine, and these scout team players get that. And it made me a hell of a better player for having had that experience. And so it's kind of a win-win for everybody. And I would probably say, and this is a very liberal estimate, maybe 5 to 10% of college coaches coach that way. Almost nobody does it. But that's one of the tenets of Frost's system, is he wants to do that as well, too. So you end up with an entire team that's going four deep and everybody's getting the exact same number of repetitions in practice, and they're doing it without costing the starters their repetitions.
Well, and you bring up, and whether you do it with walk-ons or scholarship guys, Alabama has depth. Clemson has depth. Your upper echelon teams aren't one deep. They're two, three, four deep. And how you build that up is different in every place, but you can't win a championship without depth.
No, you cannot. And you can build that depth via development. You can build it through talent. Or you can do it. When I was in college in Nebraska, it was a little of both. You did it through player development. You did it through talent. You know, I could run through the teams that we played against or that were contemporaries of ours that had more raw talent. Colorado, every year I was in school, Colorado, and honestly watching them play, most of the Bill McCartney era, Colorado, hands down, had far above and beyond, far beyond the talent that Nebraska had.
They just didn't have the depth that Nebraska had.
No, they had the depth too. They had the depth through talent. Osborne did a better job of developing what he had.
Okay.
But I think Osborne could also think circles around Bill McCartney. I don't know if that's all that hard to do. But Colorado was unbelievable. They were an absolute NFL factory for the better part of the 12 or 13 years. Do you know what Bill McCartney's record against Osborne was?
Was it like 2 or 3?
I think it was like 3-8-1 or 2-9-1.
I still remember the 94
Osborne,
game.
Yeah.
What I remember about the 94 game is that it was the loudest I ever heard Memorial Stadium in my time of covering Nebraska. That was still Cordell Stewart, Rashawn Salaam.
Yep.
And I'll never forget.
Rashawn won the Heisman that year.
And I'll never forget when you guys won that game because you
24-7.
But I'll never forget. I get there early. That's my first year covering Nebraska, and it's like nobody's there. I'm walking around the stadium. There's Bob Devaney hammered off his ass.
I loved Bob. Bob liked his scotch.
He liked this guy. It was like 9, 10 in the morning. I'm like, he asked me, he goes, how do I get in the stadium? I go, Bob, it's your stadium. You can go in anywhere you want. I'll never forget to say that. I did. I said, it's your stadium, Bob. Go ahead and go in wherever you want. You know what I like about Scott coming off the spring game? Is that he's still saying he wasn't satisfied. He's not building their ego saying, hey, you guys did a great – I think there's some gamesmanship there, but I think he's setting the tone for summer workouts. You and I have had many conversations about summer workouts, about and how important those summer workouts are. I think he's saying, hey, you guys did okay, but it wasn't great. You got a long way to go, and if you want to get better, it's going to have to take place during the summer. Agree or disagree?
No, it's going to have to be a year-round process.
Well, yeah, but
and you go back to the winter conditioning. This is going back to January when those guys first got a chance to start working with these guys in winter conditioning. It's a year-round thing. It's going to be an ongoing developmental thing, and even from a workout standpoint, this is going to run through the fall. These guys are going to have to find the weight room time. August through January, even.
So what I'm hearing is, and you tell me if you're hearing the same thing, is that the talent level down there is not as bad as one would think coming off of last year. Not as bad. Maybe not as great as you want. But
it's not as great as I think the whole Calabrasca thing had people thinking. The cupboard is not what was definitely not full.
But overall, talent's not.
They've got stuff to work with. There's some holes. It's not hugely bad. The development of the players who are there, though, cupboard's a little bare.
Okay.
So hold on. Let me try to think of a way to phrase. Cupboard's a little bare. But the bigger problem's been the development of the players that are there. The development's been the bigger problem.
Tackling, coaching. But coaching's been a problem
since and conditioning, yeah, but that, everything.
Everything you just mentioned there has been a problem since Bill Callahan came on board.
I agree.
Okay.
Because I think there's been – I think Callahan was an insanely good recruiter. I truly do.
When you have John Blake cheating for you. You're lucky John Blake left when he left.
I agree with that. I also agree that the guy was a hell of a freaking recruiter.
I'll give you that.
Callahan and his staff, great recruiters, horrible developers of talent. I think Bo Pelini and his staff were okay recruiters, and they were okay developers of talent, not great at either one. I think Riley was a great recruiting hype. Very okay recruiting. And absolutely zero development.
Zero.
Nothing. Honestly, I saw guys regress. Nick Gates, his best year was as a redshirt freshman.
You know, I like Scott's attitude. I like the guys he brought in. I'm comparing to Matt Campbell. Sometimes you get these younger guys. I mean, he doesn't have a lot of old guys on the staff. You get these younger guys who are buying into the culture, buying into the system. And I think that makes a difference. Instead of guys who are set in their ways of this.
Well, is it Verducci?
He's the older
who's,
guy.
Who's the quarterback? Yeah. He's like the wily old sage quarterback.
You need one of those.
Yeah. You got to have a couple.
You mentioned the quarterback. Adrian Martinez, good spring ball. Don't you think if you got a freshman, just start riding it. Just go, you know what, you're my guy.
Well, here's the way I see it. I mean, you've got Andrew Bunch, who I think is good runner, good passer. I don't know if he's great at either one. I think he's a pretty solid athlete. I think he surprised a lot of people. Although this is a kid who I think was a 3- or 4-star recruit, actually a 4-star recruit coming out of high school. Ended up in a JUCO, came to Nebraska from junior college. Technically as a walk-on, I mean, if you want to split hairs. I think he's better than people are giving him credit. I think there's kind of from a...
But if the tie goes to my young guy, I'm taking the young guy and riding that.
And I agree with that. I'm kind of going through everybody. I think Andrew Bunch is kind of the guy who's got a little bit of experience and is at best kind of a wash with everybody else talent-wise. And I say that as a compliment. I think a lot of guys looked at Andrew Bunch and said, yeah, this is a walk and he's never going to do anything coming out of gym. Nah, he's actually... He's kind of just a few steps behind Martinez running. He's a few steps behind Jebbia passing. I think Jebbia is the guy who, from an experience standpoint, he's been here for a couple of years. I think he's very good. I think he's a better runner. And he's a better runner than a guy like Patrick O'Brien. I think he's probably a better passer than somebody like Martinez. In terms of fitting the system, I think he's an okay fit. I think he's light years better fitting the system than Patrick O'Brien was. I got to be honest, I was shocked that O'Brien stuck around for spring ball. I thought the moment that Tanner Lee was like, you know what, Frost, this guy seems like an absolute freaking stud, but I'm out of here. Because I do not fit in the system at all.
Maybe he would, but you know,
I was shocked. I was shocked O'Brien didn't follow Tanner out the door. And I don't say in the same sense. I've met Tanner Lee. That guy is an awesome person. He's a great person, highly intelligent, and I think he'll get drafted. If not today, tomorrow.
And we're recording this on Friday.
Yeah. He'll get drafted, and I think he'll make an NFL team, and I think he's going to stick around 10 years in the NFL, maybe not as a starter, but I think he'll stick around 10 years in the NFL. I like Tanner Lee a lot, and I've got a ton of respect for the guy. He's a great person. He's highly intelligent. He'll do well at whatever he wants to do well at. Zero fit in Scott Frost's offense. Patrick O'Brien, same way. I don't know why the hell he stuck around for spring ball.
Let me just go through the mindset. Go, okay, I can always transfer. I'm here. Why not just give it a shot to see if I can run it, if I fit in. If not, I just transfer. You're going to have to sit out regardless.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's a good point.
Why not give it a shot? Why not? Because, I mean, you can go and not...
Here's my logic. From the people I've spoken with who work at the university... I got to be careful how I say that. From the people I have spoken with...
You have illegal FBI leaks?
No. It's all CIA. Come on. From the people I've spoken with, third week of spring ball, he was actually like around fourth or fifth string. And it had absolutely nothing to do with talent. He just didn't fit the system.
No, and it is a system.
Dude, every place is a system. There is a reason that Lamar Jackson isn't going to be a great NFL quarterback.
Well,
there's a reason that...
He was drafted in the first round last night.
So was Johnny Manziel.
Johnny had a drug
problem. So was RG3. No drug problem.
He had a decent season in the NFL.
And then he got hit.
Yes. You lose a knee, and that kind of that changes things a little
bit. It is. Because I look at Baker Mayfield, and all I could think, because I'm a huge Giants fan. Giants had the number two pick, and all I could think was like, dear God, please don't take Baker Mayfield. Don't take Baker Mayfield. Take Josh Allen from Wyoming. Just take Josh. He's 6'5", 230. Just take Josh Allen.
And here's what's stupid about the Browns. They take Barkley for –
Giants took Barkley.
Yeah, no. So they take
Baker. The Giants.
Barkley first and probably still got Mayfield at four.
I know. That's what kills me.
You're like, you just passed on what
it's
could be –
It's the Browns, though. I got a buddy who's a big OU fan. He says, like, Baker Mayfield, first pick. And I'm like, he's screwed. He went to the Browns. This is not going to end well.
I don't think he would have been screwed if they would have taken Barkley first and then him fourth. I think that sets up a pretty darn good offense.
Actually, I think it does as well. Because I remember watching Barkley all last fall, and all I could think is, oh, my God, this guy is the prototypical NFL running back. He's not the greatest. If you want, like, we're going to give the ball to this guy 40 times a game, that's not him. He's going to get, like, four great rushes, but then he's going to kill you as a receiver, as a blocker, and as a kick returner.
He's versatile.
He's like a little Marshall Faulk, a little bit LaDainian Tomlinson. He's much more out of that mold than he is your Adrian Peterson classic runner. And that's what I like about Barkley. This is the first I obviously liked Odell Beckham Jr. The guy's an amazing athlete. Odell Beckham and Barkley, I think, will be the two best first-round picks the Giants have had over the last 15 years. We are really digressing here when we're getting into Giants draft pick. So let's get back to Nebraska. So anyway, on the quarterback front. So Tanner Lee transferred, Patrick O'Brien, no idea why. I get it. You make a good point for him sticking around for spring ball. All I can think is if he had transferred at the semester, he'd have a spring practice in his new system under his belt at this point. And that's a lot of practice. I mean, you're talking about 15 practices. That's actually quite a bit.
It is. It is.
That's a fair amount of understanding the new system. That being said, he's a highly intelligent guy. I think he'll fit in and he'll do well somewhere. I could look at Patrick O'Brien and seeing him being a starting quarterback in college somewhere else. I don't think he's going to turn in the next Troy Aikman, and maybe I'm wrong when I say that, but maybe he will. I don't think Jebbia is going to start. I think he's really, really good. I think he is tremendously talented and very intelligent. I think in terms of fitting the system and having the physical tools, having all the tools in the toolbox to do what they need to do, I think it's Martinez. And I think that's who you go with. And I think you saw that during the spring game. Coming out of the spring game, I mean, has anybody mentioned, oh, yeah, Jebbia is going to be a great starter in the fall? No. All anybody's talking about is Jebbia. Let me put it this way. When all the defense has to do is touch you, it was basically two-handed touch football for the quarterbacks in the spring game. There was zero contact for the quarterbacks. All you had to do was touch him. Guys were still missing him left and right. And we looked at the comments. I mean, the defensive players were making, basically they were making wow type comments regarding Adrian Martinez. That's the kind of stuff you want to hear out of the defense after a spring game when they're talking about a guy.
What I liked about watching the offense, and we've seen it, but you could really see, boy, when you get athletes, and playmaker. I mean, you get to see how, with all the options and everything that goes on there, that it can do some serious damage quickly.
They can, and I think that's what Frost wants to do, and I think he's got guys who can do that. He's got enough guys. You look at some of the JUCO transfers. He's hit the junior colleges hard. I don't have a problem with that. I think they're going to continue to do that. Now, we talked about recruiting a little bit, and I think that's something worth touching on.
Okay. We have no agenda here.
We have zero agenda, although I've got, like, no beer in front of me. We should, like, take a pause break to go get more beer.
Taking a pause?
Killing me. Anyway.
We'll be right back after this commercial break. This isn't a fucking radio show. It's a podcast.
God damn it. Hey, you going to finish that beer?
Yes, I am.
Damn it.
I pace myself.
Holes in recruiting. You know, one of the areas that I think, you know, you talk about, okay, let's look at the season next year. Sad thing is last year was the easy schedule. So all the good teams are on the road this fall. There are some big holes in the schedule. You know, one of the things, I talked to a couple people inside the program, and one of the comments I got was, Riley recruited small. Not necessarily bad players, but he recruited small players. If you look at the offensive line and what Callahan, or not Callahan, good Lord, what Kavanaugh had there to work with was a bunch of 6 foot to 6 foot two guys. I think Hymus, who's probably going to be the starter, I think they're moving him to left tackle. Hymus is a guy who's 6'5". I think that's the tallest lineman they got. I think Michael Decker, who, if he can recover from a knee injury, really didn't practice at all during the spring. I think you're going to have Decker at center, 6'4", 6'5". Hymus at left tackle is going to be 6'5". Kavanaugh and Riley recruited a bunch of really small guys. They've really only got, I think, two true offensive tackles on the entire team. And when I look at the group of linemen they've got, it's Hymus and it's Farniok. And that's it. The rest of the entire offensive line across the board is guards and centers. It's hard to get through a season when you've only got two true offensive tackles on the team. You can't move a center to tackle. You can't move a guard to tackle. It's a unique position. Guard's a unique position. Center's a unique position. It's not plug and play. And they've only got a couple of guys who can play tackle on the team right now, and I think that's going to be something that's going to be interesting. Keep an eye on that in the fall, because if Hymus or Farniok gets hurt, that's going to be a problem, and they're going to have a weak spot there. The other place where they've got some definite holes to spill from a holes to spill. Good Lord, I'm drinking.
I'm
drinking beer and thinking beer. The place where they've got holes to fill is a defensive back. And there was an area that they just did not recruit well. Now, I think it was hampered by the fact that I think there was, they had four defensive back coaches in the 3 years that Riley was in Lincoln. I mean, it was kind of ridiculous. And all of them were solid coaches. It's just you have that number of guys running through that absolutely kills any recruiting that you have. And so I'll be interested to see how they do in the fall, because I think that's going to be a place where they've got some definite talent there. They've got some really, really good ball players. I think the problem is they don't have the depth there, and they definitely need numbers there. And that was an area that Frost and his staff hit hard during recruiting, but anytime you're trying to fill a hole like that, that's a two-year process.
So I want to go back to right when Scott started, they started some winter conditioning. And we brought this up before we started recording, and that was the Rabdo thing that happened. And you brought up, it happened to Iowa, 6 years ago? And then it happened here. And talk about just what Rabdo is, and I'll give you the difference in my book between the Iowa situation and the Nebraska situation. So what'd you think of the guys getting Rabdo? Were they working them too hard?
Oh, good Lord, no. You know what? I looked at it that this was purely this was not a problem with the strength and conditioning program. This was a problem with the players' attitude and prior regime in terms of how they did things. And I was told by a few people inside the program, this is Riley people who told me this, that once players achieved a certain status, basically second string, part-time starter, full-time starter, once you achieved a certain status, if you really didn't want to work out, you didn't have to work out.
Well, that's why you lose.
A lot. They lost a lot. Exactly. It's that there weren't these expectations of hard work, and it never really happened. Now, if you want to compare this, compare and contrast. When I was in school down in Lincoln, we would literally there were a couple of times where I remember you would literally have to step in between players, fellow players, and assistant strength coaches from literally coming to fisticuffs because it was late enough at night and the strength coaches were, listen, at some point we got to go home and lock the place up and you need to leave. And we would basically tell them, we're not done and we're not leaving. Lock the doors. We'll make sure they're closed behind us. And obviously liability reasons, they weren't going to leave. But we would literally almost come to blows with guys because we wouldn't leave the damn weight room. Now you got guys where you're a good solid backup. You don't even have to lift weights.
But explain to people what rhabdo is. I mean, it can be serious.
So you had a couple of Nebraska football players that had rhabdomyolysis. And essentially what it is, you get an intense enough physical exertion, workout, whatever.
Start going jaundice, your liver shuts down, doesn't it?
Well, kidneys.
Kidneys, sorry.
Kidneys. Liver, kidneys.
It's all an organ.
It's kind of a brownish-colored organ. it's all the same. But what ends up happening is you get enough of a physical exertion that it causes a breakdown in the muscle tissue. Now, this happens in any workout. That's why you go out to the yard and do enough yard work on a Saturday afternoon in the spring.
When you guys were doing creatine, did it prevent that from happening?
No. Okay. That's a whole nother ballgame. Okay. We'll get into that, and that's a whole nother podcast. So, basically, you work out hard enough. You induce a breakdown in the muscle fiber. Small little teeny tiny microscopic tears and breakdowns of the muscle
fiber.
You can
play doctor on his
big
podcast.
Time. And now, if you got the 48-year-old guy who does a hard Saturday of yard work in the spring when he hasn't done any of that over the winter, and all day Sunday you're like, oh my God, I'm so freaking sore. That's what's causing it. You've put an exertion on those muscles, small little micro tears.
So when I did yard work last week with the rake and I woke up sore?
Exact same as us working out at the stadium, Trav.
Okay.
Exact same. You're just like me.
No, I'm not.
Anyway, well, when you break down muscle tissue like that, there's a whole slew.
I'm breaking down fat when I do that, man.
Nice. That's hot. Anyway, there's a whole slew of metabolic byproducts, metabolic waste, lactic acid, and a whole slew of proteins that spill out into the blood when you get that type of metabolism and you get that type of muscle breakdown, spills into the blood. Kind of the simplified version of it is that your kidneys that act as sort of the kind of part of the body's big filtration system got to process and filter all of that. You're basically gunking up the filter. You're dumping all these proteins and metabolic byproducts into your kidneys. And by overdoing it like that and dumping too much of these waste products and breakdown products onto the kidneys, you can send somebody into a low-grade renal failure or kidney failure. Usually tends to be transient or short-lived. And it's called rhabdomyolysis, which basically means muscle breakdown. But you can induce such an intense muscle breakdown. And anybody, like I said, who's done a bunch of physical activity, whether it's a workout or your buddy says, hey, we got my flag football league Bob couldn't make it tonight. I know you haven't worked out in 7 years, but you want to sit in for Bob on the flag football game tonight? We drink beer after. And you say, yeah. And the next day you wake up and go, oh, my God, what the hell did I do to my hamstrings? That's what it is. You've induced a degree of muscle breakdown by doing that physical exertion when you're not used to it. When it happened to the Nebraska players, it didn't happen because of the workout that they did. Zach Duvall, Nebraska's current strength coach under Frost, I've known Zach for over 20 years. You will not find a more highly intelligent and conscientious human being. The guy is insanely good at what he does. There's a reason he was last year's National Strength Coach of the Year. He is very, very good at what he does. And this, he put the entire team through a whole series of athletic testing and paired a whole bunch of guys off and didn't even let them do the workout they were doing. And then the workout that he had the team do, he even paired that back. To my understanding from people I've talked with, this is not coming from Zach. It's actually coming from a few players I know. Zach actually pared the program back about 20 or 30% from what it normally is. And these guys were in such horrible shape that it nearly freaking killed him. I say that mostly figuratively, a little bit literally.
Now, this happened to Iowa about 6 years ago, and about seven guys went to the hospital. The difference is this, and listen, Chris Doyle at Iowa is one of the best strength coaches in the country as well.
He is, and I remember you and I, we talked on the radio in Des Moines about
this. Yes, the difference here was because when it happened to Iowa, you had national writers. I never forget this, and I was pretty hard on Gary Barton, and I was pretty hard on Kirk Ferentz at the time, but not for the workout. I was hard on them for the response. Kirk Ferentz didn't come back and didn't visit these guys in the hospital. He didn't do a public, even, you know, he was just non-silent about it. The difference, and I think that's what drove people nuts, is it seemed like he didn't care, like it wasn't a big deal. But you had seven guys in the hospital, and Kirk Ferentz never said anything about it. Chris Doyle never said anything about it. The university hid behind a statement. Nebraska came out right away, said, you know what, we care about our guys.
I still think it's apples and oranges.
Maybe.
And the reason I say that is I think there was an understand. So it's not like Doyle hadn't hit the door that year, did he?
What do you mean he hadn't hit the door?
Like, that wasn't his first year.
No, he'd been with them a long time.
Yeah, he'd been there. This was a new workout he did.
Yes.
The apples and oranges difference that makes this difference. I mean, I'm disagreeing with you here because
so you're saying Iowa.
You're from Iowa, which means you're not as smart as me.
Listen, I could be from Nebraska, which, by the way, I do live in Nebraska.
The difference in the situation in my mind is that I think Doyle did this. Okay. We're going to rock the boat a little bit. We're going to change things up.
Okay.
We're going to do something a little bit different. And I think he maybe pushed the envelope a little bit with a group of players who had been consistently working out and in shape. Yeah. And I think he took it to a whole nother level.
And seven of them hospitals.
You did. You had a strength coach in Zach Duvall who pre-tested guys. Didn't even allow a large portion of the team to do this particular workout because of how badly they tested out. And then he took the workout and curtailed it significantly before even letting the guys who had tested into the workout, letting them do that.
Who does it look worse on, Iowa or Nebraska, the situation? I mean, seriously.
If you want to get specific, the Nebraska players.
Exactly.
This was a testament to how freakingly, horribly out of shape these guys were and how conditioning and strength training had completely stagnated under Riley's regime. This was all on the players. this workout that he had them do, when I was in school in Lincoln, we did this exact same workout. Not the curtailed version. We did the whole thing. And when we did it, the guys I played with, and I'm talking myself and Brendan Stye and Aaron Graham and Joel Wilkes and the Peter brothers and Wistrom and Jared Tomich, all of these guys, for us, it was essentially kind of this extended heavy warm-up that we would do before we went and did our real weightlifting workout. Hey, now, these guys did that, did a curtailed version of it, and it sent them to the freaking hospital. That's how bad a shape they were in. And I think part of the reason that nobody, from a fan standpoint, from a media standpoint, I think this definitely did not get swept under the rug. No. I think people almost kind of tried to make something out of it. And the reason nothing ever came out of it is because everybody and their dog was sitting there going, yeah, these guys are really in shitty shape. And people understood how bad a shape these guys were in.
We're not going to talk about the Bill Moose comment about Urban Meyer and Jim Harbaugh running scared, because if people took that seriously, you're stupid. So, and I know most Nebraska fans love it. I like a guy who speaks confidently. And on my radio show in Des Moines, some people tried to bring it up. But I said, hold on. Jamie Pollard at Iowa State throws bombs at Iowa all the time. I go, and you like it, right? And they're like, well, yeah. I said, then you can't. It's gamesmanship, and that's what it is. I mean, isn't that what college sports is about?
Get them thinking about you a little
yes,
bit. There's a reason.
You can't like it when your guy does it and not like it when another guy
does it. I don't know how much it affected us, but there's a reason Bill McCartney did the whole circle the Dayton red
yes.
thing.
Yeah, I mean, that's what creates rivalries. That's what creates excitement. And if people got their panties in a wad over that, well, that's just a you problem. And I don't care where you're from. And I said that to my Iowa friends, because I'm a Hawkeye. For the next 4 years, I'm a Jayhawk. Rock chalk.
Wow.
But, come on. Your daughter might go to KU.
It's a good school.
It's a
good school.
My son's going to, if anybody's wondering, my son's actually going to go to the University of Kansas. And my oldest daughter's graduating in 2 weeks, man. College. Can you believe that?
I remember coming to her high school graduation party
yes.
here at your house.
And then you went and visited her in New Orleans.
We did. Ate some delicious food, because New Orleans has delicious
food. That's
right. Food.
So I've got a high school graduate this year, and I've got a college graduate this year.
That means you're getting freaking old.
I hate to, excuse me as I cough, and on a sad note, but I do want to get to this. Dave Hum passed away at 65. Travis Hill, you mentioned him earlier.
I played with Travis.
Yeah, Travis died at 48. I mean, just it hasn't been a good offseason for former Huskers either.
It has not. I met Dave Hum once.
Boy, he
stunner of a human being. Just a great person. Few people could take what he went through with as much. I shouldn't say that. I think a lot of people, when faced with that kind of hardship, face it with a ton of grace and character. And that was Dave in a nutshell. Ton of grace, absolute ton of character. And the guy did it better than I think I could ever hope to. Travis Hill was an incredibly leader. He's one of our team. He was team captain.
Did he have a heart attack?
He did. And to my understanding, it was something that kind of ran in the family.
God, 48. I mean,
obviously,
I'm almost 48. You're almost 48.
A year and a half older than me. He was a senior when I was a sophomore. He was team captain when I was a sophomore, him and Perella. Just a great guy. Absolute stud on the field. And I know everybody says this. They're great on the field, even better off. But that was that was a perfect description for Travis Hill. And like I said, I knew Travis pretty well because he was a guy that I played with. He was one of our team leaders, one of our team captains. Absolutely wonderful, wonderful human being.
That's Dr. Rob Zadiska. You got 52 minutes of us. That's not bad. We almost went an hour.
Not bad for kind of a, hey, let's do a podcast.
Let's do a podcast and have no agenda. I do encourage each and every one of you to come out to the Infusion Brewing Company Tap Room on May 17th for Boo Brew 5. It's a fundraiser.
Thursday,
May 17th.
Beer,
lots of beer. And we raise money. And here's it. Scareway Cancer is a nonprofit organization run by volunteers from MCL Construction. There's no overhead, you know, salaries and stuff like that. And all we do is give money to families and patients who need money to make ends meet. If they need to pay their mortgage payment, we're there. If they need to pay their electric bill, we're there. So you'd be supporting a great cause. You might get to see Dr. Rob there. I'll be there for the entire time. Not that that's any big deal. But again, scarewaycancer.org is the website for
more
information.
Wait, you or me?
What? Me.
Not a big deal.
Me.
Okay.
ScarewayCancer.org. ScarewayCancer.org. This is, you're probably listening to this on Podbean. Let us know what you think. Follow Dr. Rob on Twitter at DocTalkSports. We'd love to know your thoughts. If you want us to do yet another one, maybe a couple during the summer, maybe we can do that. But we'd love to hear from you. And you can email us. I'll put the email on the Podbean site as well. So for Dr. Rob Zadisk, I'm Travis Justice. Thanks for listening to this special edition of the Husker Doc Talk podcast. We'll talk to you again soon.